This is Talk Radio 680 WCBM. It's time now for Money, Riches, and Wealth. Here's your host, Drew Tignanelli.
And this is Drew Tignanelli here with Money, Riches, and Wealth. And at this moment in time, I am not alone. Look at that. I'm walking in the door right this minute. CJ. CJ O'Shea. Christopher John. I see you don't even have a microphone yet.
Yes, sir.
She didn't even turn you on. How do you like that? So anyway, we're on an open show tonight. We are going to talk about what you want to talk about. Next week and the week after that, we have guests coming on. But this week, we have another open show. So this is your opportunity to ask a question because you got a couple weeks until you're going to be able to ask one again. And traffic out there was a bear, I'll tell you. Everywhere I twisted and turned, I couldn't find a route that I could get directly here.
I made great time.
I could tell. I could tell you. You wrote to me about 5 minutes ago. You were in Gettysburg.
Westminster,
right. That was pretty quick.
Going to be a great show, though.
Yes, we're here on an open show. And so what an open show is you get to call in. You get to direct the conversation. We're not going to be focused on a specific book or author and their topic of choice, whatever it is. We're going to talk about what you want to talk about. So if you want to call in, now's the time to do it. 410-922-6680, 410-922-6680. And, you know, obviously at this time of year, we talk a lot of tax topics, and a lot of people ask questions about taxes and so forth. And one of the things we've been mentioning is the hard breaks in the Internal Revenue Code and the soft breaks, too. You know, in other words, a soft break would be something like, when is your Social Security income taxable? And the answer is if you make more than $25,000 single all the way up to $35,000, or if you make $34,000 married all the way up to $44,000, the more you make, the more it becomes taxable. But it's a progressive thing. So if you make $25,500, a little more is taxable than if you make $25,800 or $29,250. So it gradually increases as you go along. Then there are hard breaks. Hard breaks are something like Medicare premium. So if you make more than $170,000 married or $85,000 single, and you're on Medicare Part B, the normal person pays $104 per month on their Medicare Part B. But if your income goes over those numbers, $85,000 or $170,000 by $1, boom, you pay more for Medicare Part B by a good $70 a month. Is the first break, and then there's another one at like 220, let's call it, and then another one like at 270, 280, and then a final one somewhere up in the 350, 360 range, and they're big increases. It can go all the way up. If you hit that last one, it can go all the way up to $390 a month, something like that. So, I mean, you're talking about from $104 a month all the way up to $390. Now, you know, most people think, well, Drew, you know, I don't make $350,000. And people who make that kind of money, they should pay that extra premium and so forth. But let me teach you something about this, okay? And that is that just about 6 months ago, there were proposals in the Congress that they wanted to drop these numbers down to $90,000 for a married couple, $45,000 for a single, $45,000 for a single, and they were going to make the amount increases if you hit those targets a lot more. And so here's the point that you should always remember and always learn about taxes, is that when they propose something for the quote-unquote and what sounds like ridiculously rich people, $350,000, that's ridiculous, and they should pay more per month for that, it will come to you someday in your lifetime, and if not, it'll hit your children when they hit that age. That's just the way the tax laws work. You know, they start you off. There's never enough. There's never enough, and there's never enough people to pay it. So it always starts off with just a few, and then slowly but surely, it hits more and more and more. It's like the frog in the pot. They understand that, you know. They don't hit everybody right up front and say, okay, everybody making $40,000 or more in the single, you're going to pay $300 a month now for Medicare Part B. They start off and they say, well, it's only for people who are single making $85,000, and they're just going to pay a little extra. And then slowly but surely, you get engrossed into it. You're like the frog sitting in the pot thinking that, you know, hey, this isn't too bad temperature. You know, it's nice and cozy in here, you know. And the boy, the pot starts to rise, and the frog just sits there and saying, it's getting a little warmer, but it's still not bad, you know. Anyway, if you want to call in and direct the conversation to this, because obviously I'm boring, 410-922-6680. 410-922-6680. You think all those cars stuck out there in traffic along with me when I was out there a minute ago? Somebody would want to ask a question. 410-922-6680 if you want to call and ask a question. We can deal with anything. You want to talk about IRAs? You want to talk about your 401k? You want to talk about the stock market? You want to talk about, you know, Roth IRAs or, you know, whatever. Roth IRAs are a big topic.
Or annuities with bases and
annuities and, you know, and all that kind of good stuff and non-deductible IRAs. And, you know, there's so many topics that we could discuss, but you're going to get to lead that conversation. You're going to be the one that gets to make that decision. Well, anyway, it is 6:14, time for Anita's break for traffic, and we'll be right back. Money, Riches, and Wealth, and we're on an open show. Take it away, Trev.
Now back to more of Money, Riches, and Wealth on Talk Radio 680 WCBL.
The Eye of the Tiger.
There you go.
Yeah, you see, I got that.
You got it.
Either that or you told me before they came on. So anyway, we're on an open show, 410-922-6680. If you want to call and ask questions, you get to direct the conversation. And we're going to go to James first. James, how can we help you?
Oh, can you hear me?
Yeah, sure.
Okay. I'm retiring at the age of 75. If I put $100,000 into an annuity and I get, say, approximately $700 a month for life, and since I'm over 70 and a half, the RMD, I have to take that money out. Does that money that I get each month count as part of the RMD?
Well, James, it you know, so how much did you say you were going to put into the annuity?
$100,000.
So it depends on how you annuitize the annuity. If you actually, I mean, you know, the answer to your question is yes, it will definitely count as part of your RMD.
Okay.
The real point is how will it account toward your RMD? And it depends on whether you annuitize it or whether you're using guaranteed withdrawal features or some other feature as to how it factors in to your RMD calculation. So, you know, that's a little technical, and but, you know, the answer to your question is very simply, yes, it definitely counts, but it depends on how you do it as to how it will count.
I see. Okay.
All right.
So that would be good for me to talk with someone about that.
Yeah, it would be, and, you know, the annuity company should be able to help you with that if, you know, whoever you do the annuitization with, okay?
Okay. Thank
All right,
you
sir.
Much.
Take care. We're going to Al on Medicare. Al, how can we help you?
Well, yeah. My only question is, you said Medicare Part B normally costs like $104 a month.
Right.
Okay. Well, I'm just a little confused because I just signed up for Medicare Part B, and I'm paying like about $121 a month. So,
well, you are because you're
2016.
Because you're brand new in the system, you know, and because you're new in the system, you get to start at the new premium for Medicare Part B. But
well, okay, you were talking about people who have been in it for years. Then.
People have been in it. Let's say you were in it for 10 years, okay? And when you started out, you got, you know, charged $90 a month. There's a law in place that says if Social Security only goes up by 1.8%, they can't raise your Medicare B premium any more than 1.8%. You can never get your Medicare B premium increase, can never reduce your overall Social Security taxation. I mean, your overall Social Security check. That's what I meant. Your overall Social Security check. So that's why.
Okay, this might be a little confusing. When I first had an opportunity to sign up for Part B Medicare, they gave me erroneous information.
Okay? Yeah.
They told me I didn't have to sign for it. I could just take Part A because I had insurance at the time, and I did not take Part B. So if we would go back to 6 years, then maybe I would be paying like $95 a month.
Is no, if you were, if you went back, you'd be paying the $104 a month that the most people who have been in the system are paying right now. So that's how that works. And
let me see. Really, thank you for telling me this. For being conscientious and not enrolling in it and trying to pay for it myself, I've been penalized.
Well, not really. I think you were actually better off to not have signed up for it, not paid the $104 a month for the last 3-4 years or whatever, and
well,
now you're going to pay.
Actually, it's been about 6 years.
Okay, so for 6 years, so you've got $9,000 or $10,000 to pay that extra $10 or $20 a month that you're paying than the average Joe is. Personally, I'd rather have that. You know. All right, now.
That is assuming you don't have any health problems, also.
Well, no, because you're going to get, you have the same Medicare as the guy who's paying $104 a month as you are $120 a month.
Okay.
So, but you now didn't pay any premiums for the last 6 years. That's about, you know, that's about $9,000, or about $7,000 or $8,000 that you saved.
About that in medical bills by not having it is what I'm
really
saying.
Because
it's
well you know
on.
Your
yes.
Your correct. Medical insurance should have covered most of that, but I don't know.
It did please don't get me wrong, it did cover most of it, but unfortunately they were quite expensive bills.
Well, you're absolutely right. You know, you've got to, whenever you're on a company plan, and I did this actually for my own spouse, my own wife, she was on my company plan, and I said, wait a minute, I can now sign her up for Medicare and Medicare Part, you know, in a Medigap policy, and I'm going to have a better deal for her than I'm going to have keeping her on the company policy. And right. So you still have to analyze it. Just because you don't have to sign up doesn't mean that it's not a better deal to sign
right.
up. And that's your point
right.
you're making, Al. So that's a very good one, my friend.
No,
I got to run.
Thank you so much. You've been very helpful. And
all
thank
right.
you.
Take care, sir. I'm going to Washington on gold. At Washington, how can we help you?
Good evening, Drew and Chris. How are you?
We're doing great.
Great. How are you, Washington?
Okay. I heard some commercials regarding how some of the large banks are purchasing gold for some crazy reason, and I'm sure it's a commercial in order to sell you gold. But so what's the theory behind a large financial institution purchasing tons of gold?
Well, I haven't heard anything about large financial banks buying large tons of gold, but next week we're having James Rickards on, and he's going to talk about his new book, The New Case for Gold, and if there's anybody will know, A, are there major financial institutions buying gold, he'll know, and then he'll also be able to tell you why they're buying gold. So, you know, remember, a lot of banks are also traders. They try to make money, on their own capital by trading stocks and bonds and gold and other commodities and so forth. They're allowed to do that. So you've had a gold rally in the last few months, and, you know, maybe there are banks that are trying to participate in that rally, think they're making good decision. But next week, we'll ask Jim Rickards for you, okay?
Okay, well, thank you very much, gentlemen.
All right, Washington, take care. I'm going to David. David, how can we help you?
Yes, hi. I just have a wanted some advice to put me in the right direction. I'm 44 years old. I've got about $150,000 in savings right now that I'm not going to need to access until I retire.
So, okay. When you retire is 60-something?
60-something is the goal, yes.
Okay.
So the debate is whether or not we should go with a rental property, an annuity, or what type of an investment vehicle would be good if we're not going to need to touch this money for the next 20 years.
Okay. So first thing, count the annuity at 100%, in my opinion, because, you know, most of them are full of expenses that you don't need to be paying, especially at your age, okay? Also, also direct investing in stocks and bonds and mutual funds are always going to give you a better tax preference than the deferral of income of a variable annuity. So put that one aside, and now let's go to the rental property. Rental properties can be an excellent investment, except you have two issues you've got to consider. Number one, you got three issues you've got to consider. Number one, it's illiquid. Number two, you have to be willing to be a landlord. And not everybody is cut out to be a landlord. You know, you really have to understand that you're the main person that's got to go fix this, whatever, et cetera, et cetera. And if you hire a management company, a lot of your benefits of a rental property start going down the hill. So you've got to be willing to take that responsibility on of being a landlord. And the last one is you have to have a good eye for real estate. Understand, you know, not just that I can rent something for a fair amount of money, but you also have to understand that it's that real estate has to hold its value at the very least. And even better, it has to appreciate. And that takes somebody who has an eye for what makes real estate appreciate. And they've always, the old saying is, and it's absolutely true, location, location, location. If you can find a location that people want to be at today and are still going to want to be at overwhelmingly in the future, that's what drives real estate values. And, you know, safety, social opportunity, and schools are like three of the big draws to location, location, location. So, you know, if you're willing to do that, that's a good option. If you want to have liquidity and so forth, to me, the stock market and, you know, economic market opportunity through, you know, just using ETFs or mutual funds or individual stocks, where you can make your decisions as you go along. And if you need to change your mind, you can change your mind. You don't have to be a full-time manager, really. You can make investment decisions without a huge amount of time commitment. And sticking with your investments is really the key to long-term to investing. So I don't know if I gave you the best answer there, but that's a good general overview.
That's very helpful. I appreciate your pointing in the right direction.
All right, David. I got to run to my next traffic break. We're on an open show. If you want to call in and ask questions for a second half, 410-922-6680. 410-922-6680. Take it away, traffic.
Now back to more of Money, Riches, and Wealth on Talk Radio 680 WCBM.
And we're back. Money, Riches, and Wealth. And we're on an open show. Open show means you get to call in and you get to direct the conversation. Tonight, any topic you want to talk about, be it taxes or IRAs or retirement planning, 401ks, insurances, it doesn't matter. We'll address the topic for you and give you the best advice that we can in the short period of time that we're able to talk to you. We don't have anybody online right now, so if you want to call in and ask the question, 410-922-6680 is the way to get in and call and ask your question. I guess we'll talk about something in the interim until somebody decides they want to call in and ask a question. What do we want to talk about? That's a good topic.
Yeah, sure.
You know, I'll give you one. So a lot of people out there right now are doing their tax returns, and they're using TurboTax, okay? And there's nothing wrong with that. I think it's an incredible program. It does a great job for certain situations and so forth. But here's the point. You know, we do a lot of tax returns on the most sophisticated software in the industry. There's no doubt about that. The software we use is the highest caliber software in the industry. and it walks you through the return just like it does to the average Joe. And yet, every return that I do, I watch the numbers flow through the tax return, and I say, that one's not right. That one's not right. That didn't work. Something happened over there, you know?
Yeah, because of all the variables that you've got to account for when the worksheet says, where do you want the numbers?
Right.
And there's so many, again, the more sophisticated the software, the more ways of putting it in there. And so if Turbo, if you don't know what the outcome is supposed to be, you're hoping that, hey, I plugged the numbers in.
That's what they always say. It's like Tim Geithner said, you know? Well, that's what TurboTax came up with, you know? It's like, well, are you really that silly, Tim? Don't you know that that you have to understand what the outcome is supposed to be so that when you see this number come through that you know that, okay, I answered all the questions, but there's something about the way I answered the questions that wasn't correct. I had a client say, call me the other day, and he said, true. I'm getting hit with an excess penalty for that Roth that we did. And I said, you're getting hit with an excess penalty? What the heck are you talking about?
And you thought maybe the IRS, and he's talking about TurboTax.
No, he's talking about TurboTax. And I'm saying, oh, you treated the Roth conversion that we did as a contribution. He goes, oh, yeah, wasn't that what I was supposed to do? And it said TurboTax came up and said, did you make any contributions to a Roth? And I said, yes. And I said, well, no, it's a conversion. Right. It's not a contribution. He took it out, he changed it to a conversion, and all the excess penalties disappeared. You know, you have to know the outcome. I can't tell you how many TurboTax returns we amend a year for clients that come to see us and do a financial physical, and we say, well, wait a minute, you know, you did this, or look, you TurboTax did it right, but you didn't understand that you could do this. You know, like a great one is the American Opportunity Credit. People and their two incomes too high for American Opportunity Credit, but what little did they realize, their children had the opportunity to use the credit, but they didn't understand that. So anyway, TurboTax is a fantastic program, and most people listening to me right now who are using TurboTax are thinking to themselves, well, my situation is very simple, and it gets it right every time.
And there are those cases.
There are. That is true. Stephen, annuities, how can we help you, Stephen?
Yeah, Drew, we have a significant accumulation, and although my wife and I have no children, I have one child by a previous marriage. These annuities, I'm very confused about. I know they're life insurance policies.
Right.
And you have multiple ones, and do they stack up on one another? Can you name, if you have, say, five annuities, can you have five different people who can accumulate this money after my passing?
Sure. Sure, you can do that with any asset, Stephen, whether it's in an annuity or stocks and bonds and mutual funds or whatever.
Well, annuities are tax-free, correct?
No. That's one of the big negatives of annuities. So if I buy an annuity that offers me the opportunity to invest in stock mutual funds, okay, inside the annuity, and I put the money in the S&P 500, and I go up $100,000. Put $100,000 in, it goes up by $100,000. The S&P 500 mutual fund inside the annuity goes up by $100,000. Whether I live and withdraw the money or I die and my children withdraw the money, they're going to pay ordinary income tax on that annuity accumulation no matter what. No matter how that annuity is structured, any money made on it, somebody is going to pay income taxes
on
it. At some point in time, either upon your lifetime or death.
Is there any way to spread that out and try to alleviate the tax?
Yeah, you can. The heirs can use different techniques to try to minimize the income taxation of that money. But what happens is if I just own the S&P 500 individually and I die and it's up $100,000 from when I left it to my children, it becomes 100% tax free. Now, here's where your information was a little blended, I guess is a good way to call it. You said annuities are life insurance contracts, and I agreed, okay? An annuity is a insurance contract. It is an insurance contract. But it is not a life insurance contract. Life insurance, where I get money upon death, is 100% tax-free. An annuity is an insurance contract, but it is the opposite of a life insurance contract. It is designed to accumulate money and disperse that money to me over my lifetime. A life insurance contract is designed to create an estate, a lump sum of money, upon my death. So,
well, that's why we were going to create the annuity was for a lifetime income.
Yeah, but it's
also
a different
to provide for our heirs.
Well, but it's not
in a tax-free manner.
No, it's not. Not even close. It's the worst thing you can leave to your heirs, especially if your heirs are in reasonable income brackets above you. So, in other words, if you make $100,000 a year and your children make $150,000 a year, it's the worst thing you could ever do for them. You're creating ticking time bombs of taxation for your children, in my opinion.
So what's your advice on that, Dennis?
It would be impossible for me to answer that question without knowing who you are, what are your assets, where are they, why are they accumulating. And matter of fact, if you said substantial, if your assets are over $5 million and you've got a bunch of annuities, now you have created the biggest, ugliest monster you could ever create for your children. I'm serious. I don't mean that. I don't mean that half-heartedly either. I mean, to give you an example real quick, and I have to run after this.
All right.
But I have a client who's had an IRA, which is very similar to an annuity. He had an IRA worth $10 million. He was single, okay. $10 million. If he would have died and left that $10 million to his children, between income taxes, estate taxes, and Maryland taxes, and Maryland estate taxes, his children would have paid $7.5 million of the $10 million in total taxation to the government. And that's the kind of monster that these tax-deferred annuities and so forth, without the proper planning, without the proper thinking, you just got to be careful when you're being sold products by people, in my opinion.
Well, very quickly, I thank you for that advice. And if you could address that later on or some other time, how to defer that.
If you're looking to leave it to children, you want to leave it with capital appreciating assets, stocks, mutual funds, ETFs, something like that, or okay. buy real life insurance contracts, which are 100% tax free. Those.
I love listening to you every week. Thank you so much.
All right, buddy. I got to run. Thank you. I got to run to traffic. I'll be right back with Kathy and Charles after this break from traffic.
Do you have a financial planner? Have you ever thought of hiring one? Or just need a second opinion? The satisfaction guaranteed service of the Financial Physical is designed with you in mind. Many listeners, just like you, come to me, Drew Tignanelli, host of Money, Riches, and Wealth, and president of the Financial Consulate, looking for a firm that is fee-only and can offer comprehensive financial planning. The Financial Consulate has not grown by selling insurance, annuities, and bank products. Instead, we pride ourselves on the wealth of knowledge we can provide to you and your family. Learn more about the Financial Consulate and the services that we can provide at DrewTig.com. That's DrewTig.com. Or call to schedule a no-obligation introductory meeting at 410-823-SAVE. That's 410-823-SAVE.
Now back to more of Money, Riches, and Wealth on Talk Radio 680 WCBM.
And we are back. Money, Riches, and Wealth. We are here, and we are going to the last few callers on our open show, 410-922-6680. We're going to Kathy first. Kathy, how can we help you?
Hi. Good evening, gentlemen. Two real quick, I think, easy questions. When you start getting Social Security...
Uh-huh.
I heard from your show, I love listening to it, that you pay like $104. I'm wondering, am I responsible for that? Do they take it out? Where does it come from?
It comes out of your Social Security check normally, unless you're not collecting Social Security. So you can start Medicare Part B at age 65. And it costs, now if you're starting afresh, like the gentleman called earlier, it's like $120 a month. So, you know, if you start at 65 and you decide, well, I'm going to defer my Social Security until age 70 to get the maximum, then you're responsible to send a check to the Medicare people every month. If you, though, start collecting Social Security at, let's say, age 66, then they will begin automatically deducting it from your Social Security check.
Okay, that answers my question. I started collecting just 6 months short of my 65th birthday.
So when you turn 65, or you've not turned 65 yet?
I have.
Have you started to collect Medicare Part or start participating in Medicare B?
Yes.
Okay, then it should be coming out of your check now.
So I don't have to worry about it. That's good news.
No, yes, it's all taken care of. That's why.
Yeah, they're more than happy to take it right from you.
Yeah, if you look at your tax statement from Medicare, you'll see how much they gave you gross, and then they'll show you how much they took out for Medicare, and then what net check you got.
Perfect. Thank you. That makes, that feels better. Okay, next question.
All right.
Yeah,
no, go ahead, real quick.
Okay, I have a very small annuity that I took out 18 years ago. It's like $6,000. I haven't contributed anything. I'd like to get rid of it. Can I put it?
Well, you may not want to do that, Kathy, because because there's a lot of deferred income in that, and I don't know what your tax situation is, but you create deferred income and you pop yourself over those Social Security limits of $25,000, you might get a negative tax surprise. So not knowing your tax situation, I would be very careful to liquidate an annuity without somebody helping you looking at the tax thing and saying, well, Kathy, you could liquidate $2,000 of that annuity and not affect anything, or you can liquidate $5,000 of that annuity and not affect anything. I don't know what the numbers are, but I don't want you to get a surprise, okay?
Perfect. Great advice. Thank you, gentlemen. I love your show.
All right.
Thanks.
You take care.
Okay. Bye.
We're going to Charles. Charles, how can we help you?
Drew, you're a breath of fresh air. You're honest. You're level-headed, and you're not pushing anything.
Sometimes he says what he thinks.
Mike, maybe I'm asking this question because I'm lazy. When it comes time to do your taxes, you've gone all through your 1040, you get down to taxable income. How many different daggone tax brackets are there anymore? And where are the separating lines when you're married filing joint? What gets taxed at 15% or...
What's the break for married filing joint now, Chris? Like 70,000, 69,000, something.
Like 75,000.
Is it 75 now? Yeah. So you've got the 10% bracket, the 15% bracket, the
25% bracket.
When does it hit 25?
It's around
160,000. I'll look it up right now.
Yeah, if you just do a Google search on tax rate
schedule.
Well,
I ask this because I'm visually handicapped. I can't.
Yeah, okay. Well, Chris can pull it up for you real quick and tell you in a minute or so. But, there's the 125 comes in at about, the 25% bracket comes in at about 120 or so. What's it at? You have it there?
I'm getting it here. Well, because it goes up because you have the 25, then you have the...
31. Is there a 28, too?
You got the 25, 28, 33, 39.6.
33, 39.6. That's right. They move those around. You know, when you use tax...
What part of your income is taxed at 10 or 15, and then... Because it's not all taxed at 25. I mean,
for married filing joint, right?
Right.
Yeah, so the 10% bracket goes all the way up to about $30,000, and then 15 goes up to about $70,000, and then, it's $120-something for... What do you got?
I'm still...
What's the matter? It's running slow?
Yeah, it's running a little slow.
Huh. You have your... do you have Wi-Fi on in that?
I do.
Yeah, because if you do and it's the Wi-Fi's not working, it won't work. You know, schedule tax rates. Let's see. Federal rate schedules, TurboTax. See if I got it. Okay, here you go. So married filing joint, $18,450 is the top of the 10% bracket.
Okay.
74,900 is top of the 15% bracket. 151 is the top of the 25% bracket. 230,000 is the top of the 28% bracket. 411,000 is the top of the 33% bracket. And 464,000 begins the 39.6% bracket.
All right, so somewhere between 70-something and 120-something is the 25% bracket.
74,900 and 151,200 is the 25% bracket.
Thanks for your time.
All right. Now you take care, Charles. You know, the important brackets there is up to that 74,900, because that's when capital gains are 0% taxable. So you have somebody who makes a capital gain, all right, and they're in that up to 75,000 of income as a married couple, or 37,450 as a single individual. And if they make a capital gain of enough money to keep them below that, it's 0% taxable.
Sure.
0%. Zero. Not the 15 or not 20. It's zero. Let's go to Sherry real quick, see if we can get her question. Sherry, how can we help you?
Hi, thank you. I'm going to make an appeal to my health insurance company for an itemized bill that I thought was just an outrageous charge from a provider.
Okay.
And so I'm going to appeal it. It's a Care First Blue Choice. But I want to know what the likelihood, it seems like 100% markup on this item when I researched it online. What's the likelihood?
Now you're going to appeal a medical claim?
I'm going to appeal in writing to Blue Cross and Blue Shield.
On a medical claim.
Oh, just the one line item.
What, when you say one line item, what do you mean?
Right. It was provided by an occupational therapist, and it's
your chance. You know, believe it or not, Sherry, you ready for this?
Yes.
I believe, mm-hmm. and I think I could maybe prove it. I don't know. I'm just giving you my opinion. And,
okay.
The insurance companies, medical insurance companies, pay their claims people who process the claims money. Bonuses, in my opinion, if they can prove, or if they could come up with a way to minimize or deny a claim. And so my point is, if I'm right on that, I can't say I am right on that, but if I am, you have a very good chance of winning your appeal. I had one myself. I did a colonoscopy years ago. They said it wasn't covered. I had to fight for 6 months. I finally got it covered. And
mm-hmm.
so I'm out of time, but the point is that you should definitely fight it. Everyone who's told that they owe money on a medical bill should be attentive to it and should realize that there's incentives, maybe, in the medical claims business to deny claims and pay the least they can.
Okay,
all right?
Great.
All right.
Thanks for your
good
advice.
Luck.
Thank
Take
you.
Care.
Bye-bye.
Bye. Anyway, that was my own experience, so I think other people ought to fight, too,
sure.
anytime they're told they should pay. Anyway,
yeah.
This is Drew Tignanelli saying God bless.